This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
And good afternoon or good morning, depending on where and when you are listening. Thanks for joining me today. Wrapping up another week here on the program. Looking forward to the weekend. As always, looking forward to Hockey Night in Canada. Tonight, four games on the go around the NHL. We'll get to a few of them here with Elliott. Hurricanes and the Capitals. How about the Carolina Hurricanes last night? Eh? We'll get into that in a couple of seconds. Washington still hanging on by the skin of their teeth here. Is math their friend? If it is, the schedule certainly is not. When you look at quality of opponent down the stretch here for the Washington Capitals, as much as Spencer Carberry's team is crossing their fingers and hoping they can make some noise here, the schedule is not their friend. Penguins and Stars coming up tonight. Blue Jackets and Avalanche and the Kraken. Are they out? I always say that now. Lost like six games in a row. Lost a tough one last night to the Vegas Golden Knights, again. So I will ask. Kraken out? Kraken out yet? Kraken are out. They're playing the Coyotes tonight, so it's a back-to-back for Seattle. Lots from last night, and Sean Couturier continues to be a hot-button topic around the NHL. We'll get into that. Yes, he was scratched for the second time in a row, and interestingly enough, John Tortorella, head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, didn't speak after the game. That was over to Brad Shaw. Now, my personal theory on this, as I shared, Elliot and I talked about this on the podcast I shared this morning when it came out, is I think that John Tortorella doesn't want to say what's going on. And that's why it's a steady stream of, I'm not going to talk about Sean. These are our best 20 players, et cetera. And after scratching him for a second time in a row, probably said to himself, I don't want to get trapped into a situation where I have to say too much. It doesn't make sense for the team and nothing good can come of it. Although now we are waiting to see what happens with the Philadelphia Flyers. They're playing the Boston Bruins on Saturday. It is the Bruins home game Saturday. It's a home game for the Philadelphia Flyers. Flyers playing the Boston Bruins Saturday afternoon. We shall see if Sean Couturier makes his return. You could maybe even understand the scratch yesterday coming off the win the other day. You never change a winning lineup. But now that they've lost, without Sean Couturier in the lineup, you wonder if things change. That was a 3-2 overtime win by the Carolina Hurricanes yesterday. A real good goal by Seth Jarvis, who, if you don't know him, get to know Seth Jarvis. Real good hockey player, certainly, and one of the best interviews and one of the most entertaining players in the game, period. You know, when Elliot and I sat down with him at the NHL Players Tour in Vegas this past September, you know, one of the things that he went on about is, you know, how he had given up, I think it was Skittles that he said, I'm giving up candy. That's it. I'm focusing myself on physical fitness and cleaning up my diet, and I'm giving up all the candy. And there's a whole diatribe about that. And then yesterday with the comment on the 2-on-1 with Brent Burns, how he told Hannah Yates afterwards that Brent Burns gave him an awful pass. And it was a bad pass. Seth Jarvis turned it into an outstanding goal as Carolina beats the Philadelphia Flyers 3-2 in overtime. Lots to get to today. Michael Russo stops by bottom of the hour. Brian Burke will be aboard. And Rick Nash from the Columbus Blue Jackets, also the general manager for Team Canada at the World Hockey Championships. Rick Nash will stop by in hour two. So there's your program today to wrap up the week. We kick off today's show with Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and the 32 Thoughts blog/podcast. Elliot, how are you today?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you doing today?
I am good. I mentioned Seth Jarvis off the top of the show today, quickly becoming one of our favorite people to talk about as we talk about the NHL and players with a lot of personality and not being shy about being themselves. You know, you and I got a glimpse of who Seth Jarvis is all about at the NHL Players Tour, and we sat down to talk to him for about half an hour, and then yesterday telling Hannah Yates and just blasting Brent Burns for that horrible pass that he sent him on the 2-on-1 that Jarvis turned into the game-winning goal. Do you have a thought on Jarvis, his importance to the Carolina Hurricanes, and do you have a thought on the Carolina Hurricanes themselves? With the additions, this team looks like a freight train, Elliott.
Well, you know, I think that, number one, that guy does not lack confidence.
Oh,
that is the number one thing that you notice about him.
Yeah.
You know, he's still a pretty young guy. He's still... I don't know if I would say inexperienced, but he's on a team that's got a lot of experience. He's not very high on the totem pole in terms of games played, but does not matter.
No.
He is a confident lad, and I don't mind that at all. He's a great quote, as you said. And, you know, I mean, you can see the talent. There's no question about it. And you're right about the group. Like, they came to Toronto a week after the deadline, and you could see how happy they were. You could see that the guys who'd been there were really excited about what they'd done. You know, of course, that night they were down 4-2 to Toronto with, 2 minutes left, and they won it in the shootout. So, last year, they go to the Eastern Final. They lose because they can't score. Florida just grinds them down and shuts them down. And they're probably watching the Stanley Cup Final and saying, we could have given Vegas a better ride than this. You know, they addressed their weaknesses. And I think the other thing here is that I think what players notice, too, is that when you change your philosophy or you alter your philosophy, because in the past, they wouldn't pay that price for Gensel. And this time they did.
Right.
And players notice that. They say, OK, our guys think we can win.
They look scary good right now in the Eastern Conference. And the one thing that I do wonder about the East itself, the West is going to be... The West is going to be a gunfight or a knife fight an octagon. Like, never mind the rink. Like, we always talk about, you know, what can you do different in hockey? If you're playing in the Western Conference, change the configuration of the rinks to an octagon, because that's what the playoffs are going to be like in the Western Conference. So I don't know what they're going to look. Whoever comes out of the Western Conference, they are going to be one beaten up squad. So much like we looked at last year in the Eastern Conference, where everybody loaded up, right? We talked about this. There was the talent drain from the Western Conference to the Eastern Conference. And we said, whoever comes out of the Eastern Conference might just be going on fumes by the time they get to the Stanley Cup Final. And to be blunt, the Panthers were. I mean, you know, Matthew Tkachuk, his injury headlined all of it and wasn't available. And, you know, next thing you know, the Vegas Golden Knights have won their first Stanley Cup. It feels like the reverse this year, where getting out of the Eastern Conference this year, you know, is going to give you generally a better chance than other seasons, because I don't want to know what that or think about what that team that comes out of the West is going to look like. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I think to get to the Stanley Cup Final, you've got to win 12 games and basically play 18, right? So
yeah.
You know, I guess 21 is the most you can play, but so it's a rodeo either way. But the one thing I certainly think, Jeff, is that the level this year in the West is going to be higher. The physicality, the quality of the teams, that West first round, like, there's going to be teams that could win the Stanley Cup in the first round who lose. There's going to be matchups in the first round that you could say that should be a Stanley Cup Final. We shouldn't be seeing that starting on April 20th. So you're right, and it's a good thing. You're going to need at your age to start taking naps in the afternoon so you can stay up late enough to watch it.
Well, if anybody knows anything about naps, Elliot, it's you,
yes,
my friend.
I know.
Let me ask you this, because and sticking with this same vein, you know, I had a couple of people comment on this, and I know for the first game of Hockey Night in Canada, you're busy getting the second intermission feature, the headlines feature together. So as much as you're trying to pay attention to all the early games, I know it's a challenge. But if you go back to the weekend where we saw the Maple Leafs and the Carolina Hurricanes early, and then the later game was Edmonton and Colorado.
Yeah.
A lot of people noticed a stark difference in the tempo, in the physicality. Like, not taking anything away from Carolina and Toronto, two excellent teams. But there's a difference, Elliot. Like, there's a difference this year. Like, were you able to notice that? I'm sure, you know, sitting around with Jan and Kevin and Ron and Kelly, like, they would have said something. Like, did you notice a real difference between the two? You did, eh?
Yeah. It's also, like, as quick as, like, Carolina's a pretty physical team, but it's just definitely seemed more physical, even faster.
Yeah.
It's McDavid, it's McKinnon. It's going to look pretty fast, but it seemed fast. And
yeah.
I'll be watching on Saturday. I tomorrow night for sure, probably more than I usually do, because it's Oilers Leafs, it's Matthews, McDavid, and everything else that comes with it. I'll say this. The funny thing is, I was already warned today by the producer, Brian Spear, that I might be downgraded in the second intermission of the first game, that the game highlight, the game chat may go first and headlines may go second. This is an insult. I'm going to have to complain to HR about this.
Wow.
Because,
Brian Spear. You know,
nobody puts Elliot Friedman in a corner. So, and Brian Spear is threatening to do it.
Brian Spear channeling his inner John Tortorella and scratching the captain, Elliot Friedman. Yeah. Although I guess Ron McLean would be the captain.
I am definitely not the captain of this team. If I'm the captain of this team, we're doomed like the Titanic. We're going straight into the iceberg.
Hey, speaking of Titanic, I don't know if you tried to get me there deliberately, but what did you make of Celine Dion and the Boston Bruins last night reading out the starting lineup?
I make it. She's never getting invited back because they lost.
That's right, and I don't think she'll be invited. You know what? I don't know if she'll be invited to Montreal anytime soon.
You know what? I get it, but I think all this stuff is fun. What did she do before Vegas? I think it's great. I think those are great videos. The looks on the players' faces when she walks in, and I think it's hilarious. It's great crossover. I get a huge laugh out of it.
I'll tell you, I will never get sick of, and these videos started to pop up on Twitter a couple of years ago where people put the Titanic theme, like, you know, where the big crescendo happens in the theme, and they marry it to like a big one. There's a New Jersey Devils one with the Dawson Mercer goal, which I should probably tweet it. I'll send it to you. Which, honestly, I cannot. I watch it every few weeks, honestly, just to make myself laugh because it is so perfect. Mercer hits the shot, and there's the crescendo.
Is it the one with the bad recorder? Because there's a Titanic one when somebody played with like a bad recorder.
No. This is the actual theme. But honestly, like for big sporting events, the way that people are marrying the Titanic theme to them. To me, it is the height of comedy. Nonetheless.
Yeah, that stuff is good. I like that stuff.
It's great. So that was fun with Celine Dion yesterday. You're right. The Boston Bruins drop a tough one. The Boston Bruins will face off against the Philadelphia Flyers on Saturday afternoon.
Yep. And that's a Sportsnet game.
Yeah, and we'll all be tuned in. It should be a good game. The Flyers fighting for a playoff spot, and the Boston Bruins in a competition for top spot in the division with the Florida Panthers. But you know what the topic of conversation is going to be. Will he be in the lineup or not? The Sean Couturier decision. Now, it's two games in a row. And the interesting thing about this one, too, is this story isn't just limited to the local market. And when you consider how many players played either with or against Sean Couturier, and I know that Brandon Dubinsky was first out of the gate on Twitter. I mean, everybody is weighing in on this. You know, people that have been coached by John Tortorella before on the podcast, I brought up the 2001 Vinny LeCavalier situation between Tortorella and his star player. Like, this is one that goes beyond just, you know, John Tortorella scratching a player, albeit the captain who was most recently named, you know, just over a month ago. And a veteran player coming off back surgery. Like, this thing has kind of taken on a life of its own. Like, And it's built throughout the week, and the second scratch in a row didn't do anything to calm anybody down. If anything, it just threw more logs on the fire. How do you look at what we just saw this week? I mean, you're in Florida, the general manager's meeting, and all this starts to happen, and you're around, like, a lot of the power brokers and a lot of, you know, assembled media as well. And this thing just kept on growing and growing and growing and through the game yesterday. And then Tortorella didn't address it after the game, and it continues, and we're wondering about Saturday afternoon. Do you have a thought on what we saw this week with the Philadelphia Flyers and their captain and their coach?
Well, the number one thing it says to me is Couturier's popularity. And I'm talking about popularity in the market. I'm talking about his popularity among players. And I think the respect for what he's done. Yep. Because I just don't know if it lasts this long. Like, there's a lot of things going Tortorella's. If you look at just the basic way it goes, there's a lot of things here going Tortorella's way, right?
Yep.
Number one, they've gotten 3 out of 4 points without Couturier in the lineup. No. Okay. So normally when you scratch a player and the team wins, you know, the coach doesn't face that much criticism. Number two, Tortorella's had a great year with the Flyers. Like, they are in the playoffs right now. Yep. And nobody saw this coming. Like, you know, And actually, I have to say, as much as it pains me to admit, yes, you are the guy who saw this coming. Yes.
Thank you.
And you got me so good that in Philly, they made a TV commercial out of it.
Well, highlights of my year. I love the fact that they used that. It was great.
But that's the thing. So no, in a year like this, where the coach has pressed all the right buttons and, you know, they've gotten 3 out of 4 points with Couture out of the lineup, how many coaches would be taking this much criticism?
Yeah.
Like people would say, you know what? You know, he was right. But that's not happening here. Now, even though they got a point last night, they lost in overtime. So it gives them the out to say, okay, Couturier is back in. The other thing, too, is for as much as, you know, Couturier cares and nobody's questioning about this and he competes, you know, he had one goal in 27 games. So people would look at that and say, okay, like he's clearly given him enough chance to work his way through this. But I think it's a couple of things. Number one, it is Couturier, popular guy, came back a long way. People, that really resonates with people. He's the captain, and they just made him the captain a month before. Number two, I think some of it's Tortorella, because as well as he's done this year, there are people who don't like his methods. And number three, and I wish I would have thought about this last night when we did the podcast, but clearly now Tortorella is doing something with the media and the reaction, because, you know, sometimes he doesn't talk in the mornings. That's not unusual. Or he'll talk before the players are available, and then, you know, the players will talk, and that's when we found out for sure about Couturier, and then either Bradshaw or Rocky Thompson will do it. It's not unusual for Philly to do it that way. But then, like last night, it's Bradshaw. And, you know, again, I'm always willing to say there's maybe something I'm missing, and maybe there's a legit reason that Tortorella couldn't talk. But without that, it sure looks like he's thumbing his nose at everyone. So, you know, it's wild to me that in a season that Philly's had, in a great year, you have this kind of chaos as they're going into the as they're running to make the playoffs. Like, Philly in the playoffs this year is an enormous win for this organization. An enormous win for the organization. And look, it's almost like a Canadian market. It's like this would happen in Toronto or Vancouver or Calgary or something like that. This doesn't – I mean, Philly is as good as it gets without, you know, really being in Canada. But still, this seems even too much for them.
Is there a role that either Keith Jones, Daniel Briere need to play in all of this? I want to shift gears here in a second, but one final thought. Is there anything that you think management needs to do here? Or, I mean, listen, you know my theory. I shared it on the podcast that came out this morning, and that is I think that John Tortorella is looking at this and saying there's no good that can come to the Philadelphia Flyers by me talking about Sean Couturier right now. So if I'm asked, I'm going to deflect or not going to show up at all.
Well, I don't disagree with your theory. When he says I'm not talking about Sean, I think it's his way of saying I don't want to pour gasoline on the fire. I do think you are correct about that. The Briere said at the GM meetings that at some point in time, when he got back to Philly, he was going to meet with everyone about it. And I assume he's going to have to manage this. Like, from what I remember, Briere has a really good relationship with Couturier too. So that's, you know, that's another part of it. But like, look, like right now, you know, Tortorella is at the height of his powers. You know, he's, you know, and that's one of the things that has surprised me about all of this. It's that, you know, you would think that Tortorella would get the bigger benefit of the doubt because of the year he's had, but it's Tortorella, so it really gets visceral reactions. I mean, at some point in time, like the one thing is, like Daniel Briere and Keith Jones, they've seen all this stuff before. They'll deal with it. Like, at some point in time, they'll deal with it. But, you know, right now it's like, okay, this is the white hot story, and it's got to run its course until, you know, the media sees something else shiny and we go look at something else.
Well, I'll tell you, just as a quick aside here, I'm not sure what type of feedback you've received in the last couple of days since you and I started talking about video coaches, and the touchstone of this conversation was, you know, all the conversation at the general managers meetings around, you know, expanding video for different things. And, you know, the sidebar to all of that is, you know, video coaches are more important than ever. I got a couple of notes from video coaches today, taking exception with one thing that I said specifically about video coaches. There's one consistency. Like, I'm sure there's more. Trust me. I'm sure, like, the length of grievances people have about what I've said either here or on the pod is, you know, longer than your arm. But still, there was one consistency between a couple of different messages that I got. Do you know what it is? It's interesting.
No, I honestly, Jeff, last night's a bit of a blur, so I don't really remember. What was it?
When I was trying to make the point of, you know, extending your career, if you're a player and you want to extend your career and continue to work with an organization in some capacity, to consider working as a video coach. And a couple of people who got in touch with me today who work as video coaches both said, like, there were two specifics who said that's a terrible idea. That's not the MO of a hockey player.
You know, it's funny. I got one of those too.
Did you? And it was essentially saying the video, like, as a video coach, you have to be comfortable putting in super long hours and not get any credit whatsoever, public, private, or otherwise. That is not the MO of a hockey player. You need to look elsewhere. Now, someone that certainly knows the game, you have to. But, you know, people said to me, don't just focus on X players will make good video coaches. Now, I will say that one person pointed out one player specifically whom he thought would make an excellent, excellent video coach, because you need to have precision and, you know, be so precise on all the details of the game. And this one person said to me, you know who would make a great video coach? I said, who? He said, Zach Hyman would make an outstanding video coach just because of how detail-oriented he is. He said, that's the guy. If you're going to focus on a player like Zach Hyman. Don't focus on, like, superstars like that. Although Zach Hyman's superstar, he's 50 goals. Said, focus on players like that if you're going to focus on players. But by and large, don't focus on NHL players.
That would be pretty funny tomorrow night if he scores his 50th and Draisaitl tells him no. Get back into the room and break down the power play.
I mean, that is one of the things that we're watching for tomorrow, isn't it? Like, listen.
Oh, my God.
Like, that
night, you know, Matthews scored his 50th in Arizona.
Yeah.
That was one of our regionals with Dave and Nick and Justin. And, you know, everybody was sitting there watching that game saying, you know how badly he wants to score his 50th in Arizona. And that rink that night was a lot of Leaf fans. So
yeah,
it was like watching a game at Rico Coliseum.
Yeah.
But like tomorrow night, you got Matthews going for 60. You've got Hyman in his hometown going for 50. That's going to be a huge subplot. And you know what? You know, I want to see it happen. I really do. I think it would be great. I think it would be great theater. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, is, and it's Edmonton and Toronto on a Saturday night. And I think that Edmonton and Toronto should never not play on a Saturday. I think every time they meet, it should be a Saturday game. It should be hockey night, just like Toronto and Vancouver is a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I just don't think Matthews and McDavid should ever not face each other on national television on Saturdays. And maybe I'm biased because it benefits the place I work for, but I just think it's better for the league too.
Biggest players, biggest stage, biggest teams, all of it. It all makes sense. Also on hockey night, the Calgary Flames face off against the Vancouver Canucks. Do you have a sense of where Vancouver is at right now?
Well, first of all, I'm wondering if this is going to be a Markstrom game for Calgary tomorrow.
Yes.
Ryan Huska said earlier in the week, it looks that way. They were hoping for that to be the case. You know, Dan Vladar, I think they knew he was going to need surgery after the season, but they were hoping he would get through it. That's obviously not the case. You know, for Vancouver, you know, DeSmith once again gives them a good start.
Yep.
I think he's done a really good job for them for the most part this year. And he's doing a nice job for them here as they keep collecting wins. They beat Montreal. I'm not guessing we're going to see Demko until probably, my guess is we see him about a week and a half before the playoffs, something like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe start skating next week and then we'll see. But they've got the cushion. They don't need to rush him. DeSmith is giving them some good games. Their schedule's not that bad. It would take a lot for me to rush Demko back into action. But, for me, I saw they gave Ian Cole the rest last night. He got, a little older guy. With me, with Tocchet, there's a couple things I'm looking at. Like, obviously, he's pounding down to them, like, it's time to play playoff hockey, and you watch that. But for me, the big thing is just who's playing with who. They've added a bit this year. They've changed their team around a little bit. We all know the Lindholm stuff, and now the revelation that he's battling a little bit with an injury. Like, for me, it's all about what does Tocchet think going into the playoffs are his best trios and combos. That's basically what I'm watching for Vancouver right now, is who does he like playing with who, and who does he think fits well? Because they've had a tough time getting Lindholm mixed in there, and obviously finding him a place where he's comfortable is key.
We love talking about the Winnipeg Jets. It's funny, just before the show, I was talking to Jeff Blair about the Winnipeg Jets, and good to hear Blair and Barker back on the air. It's baseball is back, baby. You look at that game last night, and full value to the New Jersey Devils and full value to Jack Hughes with a pair of goals in that one. 4-1 is the final. And like, it wasn't that the Winnipeg Jets players seemed upset about the loss as much as they seemed disgusted at how they played. Like, the difference, like, you can be upset about a loss, and that happens. And sometimes you just have to do that performance, but like, they seemed like really disgusted at their performance, specifically on the penalty kill. Like, this wasn't just, we're upset that we lost. This was like, it offended them that they lost the way that they did. You have a thought on where the Jets are at right now? Because coming out of that one, I would hate to be, they play the New York Islanders next, and we all know the Islanders situation, but you'd hate to be the team that Winnipeg plays next, because that is going to be a snarly bunch after they had that type of performance at the Rock last night.
Well, I think one of the reasons they were pretty disgusted was they just had a big win in New York, right? So they're sitting there and they're saying, okay, we have the big win in Madison Square Garden against the Rangers, and then we go and we lay the egg right after. So that's probably, to me, as much as anything else, because it's such a great feeling after the win against New York, and then that happens. So I think one has a lot to do with the other. The other thing too is that you take a look at that battle atop their division. You're looking at it. You're looking at it today, and Winnipeg had a chance to be 2 points up on Colorado with the same number of games played, and 2 points up on Dallas with the game in hand. And you're sitting there, and they've got the best tiebreaker. Like, Dallas is not going to beat either one of those teams in the tiebreaker. And Winnipeg is two regulation wins ahead of Colorado. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting there and you're saying, boy, you blew your chance to give yourself a leg up. Like, that's what I think you're sitting there saying. It's not only you lost, but you had an opportunity to even more take control of the division. So that's what I think they're sitting there saying. I completely agree with you. And by the way, just in case you're wondering, Winnipeg's next game is tomorrow against those Islanders. So there you go.
Yeah. So
and the Islanders are really like we talked about this. There's almost nothing to say. Like, they are just they're just a free fall.
Yeah, and there was that brief glimmer yesterday in that Detroit game where they made it 5-3. Of course, Patrick Waugh pulling the netminder with 5:35 remaining in the third period. True to form for Patrick Waugh, and then Dylan Larkin ices it with the empty net goal, and it was just over. And then it was just like, honestly, like, as much as you know, Jets players were disgusted at how they lost yesterday to the New Jersey Devils. You look at the Islanders players skating off the ice, and they're just bewildered. Like, how did this all happen? I think what's going to start to dawn on Islanders next is, what does next year look like? Because the way that they have collapsed here, and again, a lot of people saw this, said, oh, I saw this coming. You should have been more eyes open wide about this. Look at their record. Look at their play. They can't score goals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is a team that's not used to just collapsing like this. And this is not a coach that's used to collapsing like this, nor is this a manager that's used to collapsing like this.
No.
Like, this to me screams changes.
Right away,
Freed. Like, it's, I don't want to say everything's on the table, because everything's not on the table here, but there's a lot of things that are on the table now that weren't at the beginning of the season for the Islanders.
Yeah, I think so. It's really, really disappointing. Not only for their fans, but I assume for the organization.
So on that happy note, cheer up, enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll watch for you on Hockey Day in Canada tomorrow. Thanks, bud.
All right, buddy. Take care.